भद्रं कर्णे दिश्यन्याम देवाः भद्रं पश्येमाक्षभिर्युचक्राः स्थिरैरङ्गैः सृष्टवागुंसस्तनूभिः यशेम देवहितं यदायुः स्वस्ति न इन्द्रो वृद्धश्रवाः स्वस्ति न पूषा विश्ववेदाः स्वस्ति नस्तार्षो अरिष्टनेमिः स्वस्ति नो बृहस्पतिर्दधातु ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः. Okay, we're on verse, let me show you here. Jagrit swapna shishityadi prapancham yat prakashate prapancham yat prakashate tad brahmahamiti jnatva tad brahmahamiti jnatva sarva bandai pramuchyate. Jagrit swapna shishityadi Sushupti Adi Prapancham Yat Prakashate Ted Brahma Aham Iti Jnatva Sarva Bandaihi Pramuchyate. First one is Yat Prakashate. Did I say that? Yat Prakashate, then Pramuchyate. Yat Prakashate, that which shines, that which lights up, or that which lights up the prapancha, means lights up the universe. The prapancha is the world that I'm experiencing. Anything that can be objectified in the creation, either on the subtle level, in the mind, or on the physical level of the world that I perceive through my sense organs. So that which lights up the world of the jagrat, the waking state. The waking state means the world that I experience through my sense organs. Or the swapna is the dream state, which I don't experience through my sense organs. The dream state is what I experience through the mind when I go to sleep and I wake up in the sleep into a dream. So the dream state. So that dream world, what is experienced there. Or in the deep sleep, where there is no subject-object duality taking place in deep sleep. There's just I don't know anything, and all is well with me without the thought. Right? It's the deep sleep. And the deep sleep is something that when you wake up, you remember and you can describe. And so it is its own experience that can be differentiated from the waking state and the dream state. So these are the three avastas, the three prapanchas, the three what we call the dharmas, or the states of experience. So the one that lights up, that illumines these three states of experience, the waking state, the deep sleep, and the dream state and the deep sleep state, that one who lights that up, that Brahman, that is Brahman, and that Brahman I am. Tad Brahma Ahamasmi. I am that Brahman who lights up these three states of experience. So this is Jnatva, having known that, I am that Brahman, I am that infinite self that lights up the waking state, the dream state, and the deep sleep state. Having known that, then sarva-bandhaihi pramuchyate, that person, that one who knows, is free from all bondage. So this is it's a beautiful verse, because this is the idea. Remember in the previous verses we've been talking about the waking, dream, and deep sleep state, right? So he's built up to this verse, right? You're new, so I'm telling you that. He's built up to this verse. But this is the idea. In the waking state, I am totally identified, really, with this body. Right? I am the waker, and this is the waking world. Right? So I am the subject, everything else is the object. And so, as long as this is me, this body, mind, sense, organs complex, I am subject to change, subject to birth, subject to death. That's a given. There's nothing I can do about it. And I am a limited being within the creation. Differentiate, I'm different from you, and I'm different from each one of you. I'm also different from the rug, and I'm different from the chair, and I'm different from everything, actually. Right? And everything about me is subject to change. and subject to birth and death. That's the situation of what we call the jiva in the waking state. Now, if this body, mind, sense organs complex in the waking state is me, right, then that is my reality. I am someone who is subject to birth and death and change and subject to loss. That's the reality. Because that's the reality of all of us, of anybody who has a body. Hmm. However, the whole what we call unbhavyatireka that's been being unfolded here in these verses is to do with this. The one who is the waker, me, right, is also the one who is the dreamer. And we know that. This is accepted knowledge. I, the one who is in the waking state, me, I am the one who had this amazing dream last night. So the one who is in the waking state is the one who is in the dream state. It's my dream. And also, I also had a really deep sleep last night and I was totally conked out and didn't know anything. That's also me. I'm very clear about that. That means that there is one who actually has what we call an anuvritti, one who is present in all three states. We don't think of that as being something extraordinary. But it is extraordinary because, in fact, each one of those three states negates the other. And so, in fact, the waking state and the waker in the waking state is totally negated, not present. In terms of my experience, the waking state and the one in the waking state is not present in the dream state. In fact, the waking state, I have this body, in the dream state, I have a totally different body. A totally different set of circumstances, a totally different world. And so here's the waking world where the waking body is replaced by the dream world and the dream body. When I'm with the dream world and the dream body, this is not in my field of experience at all. In fact, I have a totally different body now. Don't you think that should be strange? Now I have this body, this is fine, this is me. But then I have another body, that's fine, that's me. And in the deep sleep, there is no body, there is no subject-object differentiation, there's nobody there chatting away and saying, oh, this is a wonderful deep sleep, I'm just enjoying it so much. Isn't it nice to just be totally, you know, without any knowledge of the world? Not even any knowledge of myself. There's nobody even there saying that. There's no jiva present. The jiva, really, the individual is in a causal condition. We say causal because you come back with all of your faculties. But in that deep sleep state, there's not even any know or known. There's nobody there. There's nobody there in the sense of a running commentator, a perceiver perceived. And that also is fine with me. It's absolutely fine to go from this world to this world to no world, and then wake back up in this world, no world, like that. No world means there's no objectification at all. And it's also perfectly fine, and my immediate experience that I am the waker, I am the dreamer, I am the deep sleeper. No problem. Even though I give up in each one of those experiences what I have always taken to be me. What this means is that the me experience, the self experience, the conscious being that makes me me, is totally independent of the waker waking experience, dreamer dreaming experience, deep sleep experience. Totally independent of it. The sense of self, the sense of me, is absolutely untouched by these three states of experience. That's why when one comes, the other comes, there's no problem for me because I haven't come and gone. Nothing's happened to me, in fact. As I traverse through these three states of experience, the experiences are negating themselves, but nothing is negating me. So here it says, that one who lights up is the conscious being, right? The conscious being that lights up these prapanchas, these worlds, the waking state, the dream state, the deep sleep state, that one I am, right? And that one is Brahman. That Brahman means that self that I am is Brahman, means is infinite. That conscious being is infinite. What do they mean by infinite? Is it's not limited by any of these worlds. You know, the waking world comes and goes, replaced by the dream world comes and goes, replaced by the deep sleep world comes and goes. None of those worlds, universes, touch me or limit me in any way. And you have this, we have this experience, we may not be, we have this experience, we may not be cognizant of the ramifications of this experience, but we have it day in and day out. Now, one that I think is really profound that can just hold this knowledge right up to your face is when you wake up, the experience of waking up from a dream, you know, say you're involved in a dream, you wake up from the dream, say you're very involved in the dream. Involved in a dream, it's very real, you're totally engaged in it, the alarm goes off or whatever, you wake up. What happens is that dream body that you were identified with and that dream situation that you were totally enmeshed in, right, vanishes. And there isn't the slightest change in you. You can even die in the dream. Anything can happen in the dream. Nothing happens to you. And so in that process, if you just make a note of this, so that you just see, you can make note of it next time you wake up from a dream, just notice that not anything happens to you at all. This world has gone. The dream universe is gone. The dream character has gone. The dream situation has gone. You have not gone. The you that was the dream character has not been touched. You think you are the dream character. You behave as though you're the dream character. You believe that you are the dream character. You are the dream character. It's not anybody philosophizing about it. The dream character isn't saying, am I the dream character? Am I not the dream? You just are the dream character. Right? The dream character says, I am the conscious being. But just take it for granted. You know, unless you have a mumuksha in the dream. If you've got like a seeker in the dream that's saying, what really is the truth of this whole situation? But normally the dream is just pure ignorance. Okay, ignorance of ignorance. There's so much ignorance that there's ignorance of ignorance of ignorance. There's no question about it. So that dream character now has vanished. At that. But the dream character hasn't gone. The dream character is gone, but who the dream character is has not gone at all. Nothing has happened. Nothing has happened to you. You who are the dream character, nothing has happened. You haven't been touched at all. And that's our situation here. You are never touched at all in any way. You know, when we use the waking dream and deep sleep, it is very, very powerful. Because we have the experience of one universe replacing another. One universe of experience replacing another with nothing happening to me. But when you do japa, now we're just back into the waking state. We're in the waking state here. We're doing japa. When do we recognize this? These thoughts are rising and setting. The mantra is rising and setting, rising and setting. It's not touching me at all. In fact, nothing is happening to me. I'm not touched in any way. And so that is the same thing. You know, it's just you're noticing that you're not touched in any way in reference to a thought, in reference to an emotion, in reference to a perception. Japa is very profound that way because it really helps to differentiate your own presence. But once you've differentiated it, once you recognize yourself, then you recognize just in the waking state, walking around, talking, experiencing the world. Hi. Yeah. Walking around and experiencing the world, you are not touched in any way, and yet you're totally engaged. And that's fine. You're totally engaged from the standpoint of your body and your mind and your sense organs, but your being is untouched. Always. And so the mind has that strength of knowing that itself, which is full and complete, right? And is the very self of the mind, is also totally free of the mind. That's why we do the japa, is to just be able to see that. And then you see it all the time. You're always exactly the same and you're always engaged. As long as you've got this body, your body is engaged in the world, it's engaged in the world. Your mind is engaged in the world, you have feelings, you have emotions, you know, you have your work that you do, the whole life is going on. That's the prarabdha, the karmas that took you, that brought you into this world, that you're busy. Life goes on. Even if you're a sannyasi and just meditating on all the time, you still have to eat, you still have to clean your little place, you have to do everything. You know, you have to take care of things, you have to live, you have to breathe, you have to take a bath, you have to do all, the life is full of stuff that has to be done. So this continues on. What if your eyes are open? If your eyes are open, then you're taking in perception after perception after perception. It's very busy. You know, just being a human, you're busy. And at the same time, you don't do anything. At the same time, yourself is absolute shanti, absolutely whole, absolutely full and complete. And so doing nothing, you do everything. And these verses are going to be saying that. Doing everything, you do nothing. Seeing, you don't see. Right? Seeing, you don't see. Hearing, you don't hear. All it means is from the standpoint of your being. Right? Your being is still. You need to see. You need eyes. The eyes see. But the consciousness that illumines the eyes is free of sight. You need ears to hear. But the consciousness that illumines the ears is free of hearing. You need a mind to think. But the consciousness, the being, the me that illumines the mind, it's not thinking. The mind is thinking. But the consciousness, which is the self of the mind, is free of thought. It's another thing. When you do the japa, you recognize that yourself, the conscious being that you are, is not doing japa. Yourself is still. It's not doing anything. Nor is it thinking. It's not doing. It's not thinking. It's not lighting up the mantra as an action. It just simply is the self-effulgent conscious being that you are, in which that mantra, which is always lit up in exactly the same way, not as an action. It's that being, that whole wholeness, the wholeness of your being in which the mantra is taking place, but you're not doing anything. So you have to get used to that. You have to get used to it. It is the fact of it. You know, like right now I'm chattering away, teaching the class, and you're all listening to it. I'm neither talking nor are you listening from the standpoint of your being. You just simply are. And why is that okay? Because it's infinitely whole. You are what you seek, in fact. You are the wholeness that you seek. And that's why we like to go to bed. Why we like to meditate. You know? Look at we like to meditate. Why? Mm-hmm. Because we close off everything and just am with myself, and that's very whole and peaceful. You like to go to sleep. Why? Because you just get rid of all the distractions, get rid of all of the problems, you go to sleep. You know? Those things are all gone, and I can just be with myself. Because the self is whole and full and complete. We meditate, shut down all of our sense organs, make the mind quiet, absorb it into myself. Why? Because it's miserable? You know? We do it because of the profound wholeness that is your very nature. Right? And so, and that nature is, that is you, is always the same. And so no matter what is going on in this samsara, this world of duality, whatever is going on in the mind, that is going on in my presence. So I'm holding that. Once it's been differentiated, and so my own being is a great comfort to the mind. When your mind is going out and getting into trouble, you know, it's because of habitually, it gets into all kinds of trouble, wanting this and wanting that, and upset because this didn't work out in the way I thought it should, and if it worked out that way, I would be happy. But since it didn't work out that way, I'm really miserable. All this type of creations that we make, just habitually, until all of that drops off in the light of my knowledge. When all of that is going on, it's going on in me, who remains the same, and who by nature am full and whole and complete. And so my own being relaxes that disturbed mind. I can bring that disturbed mind back to me, who am not disturbed. What I'm saying is that there's in your disturbance, right? In the disturbance, there is one who's not disturbed. And so you can bring the disturbed part home to the part that by nature is never disturbed, never will be disturbed, never can be disturbed. And since that one is there, the mind gets a tremendous relief from that, even when it's in the middle of its disturbance, which is kind of a habitual way of thinking. This disturbance always is, I need it to be this way to be happy. That's the disturbance. I need it like this, and it's not being like that. Or I need it to be like this, and I see a threat around the corner. Threat's not here yet, but I intuit that it could be becoming, and then it won't be how I want it to be. So half of the disturbance is in our imagination of things that could be happening, that would be disturbing. Something could be happening in the future, you know, that I wouldn't like. So the mind gets disturbed about that. And it's very complicated. Very layers and layers of projections and disturbance, but the disturbance is always, I need it to be like this to be happy. But actually all I need to be happy is a mind that's relaxed, because the source of the happiness is only the Atma. When the mind is relaxed and myself fills that mind, in other words, I have no problem. My being is wonderful, just as it is. That can be better, in fact. You know, and when the mind isn't creating problems with its worries, then there's no competition. The one who is fine is just the one who's there. Right? The one who is fine is always here, but sometimes the one who is fine, who is always here, is illumining a lot of pain. And so the one who is fine is now holding pain, but pain is my experience. And if there's no differentiation, it's not that the one who is here is illumining and holding the pain. That's a much better situation than just being the pain. But it's better to abide as myself holding the pain because of the agitated mind who wants something to be different so that I can be happy. You're much better off to have differentiated yourself from that painful state of mind than the precursor, what is prior to that, is just, I am the painful state of mind because I haven't differentiated myself. But there comes a time that once you recognize yourself as being fine, then you don't need this and that and this and that to be different so that you can be fine. It's very simple. Once you've recognized the one who is fine, not more than fine, the one who is full and complete, then you don't have to go about trying to create a situation where you can be full and complete. That's when you can you appreciate the whole universe, in fact, as Ishvara, not as something that you have to change, you know, in order to be happy. Then you can just objectively be in your situation and work to make things better if something needs to be made better. But your ananda is not. Your wholeness, your fullness, your well-being is not at stake. So that is what they mean here by having knowing this. Knowing myself to be the one that lights up these three states of experience, waking, dream, and deep sleep. Having known that, I become free of all bondage. Because the bondage belongs to within the waking, dream, and deep sleep. It doesn't belong to the one who lights the whole thing up. So, okay, let's stop there. Pick it up again next week. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamadachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om. Sorry, everybody online. I'll try to figure out what the problem is for this thing. I don't have any idea why it wasn't working.
You know, sometimes you can say that I illumine my state of experience and know the nature of that I. But then the state of experience keeps getting worse.
Yeah, because there's something that's bothering you. You know, there's some area where your well-being is identified with it. And that creates a lot of dukkha, a lot of sorrow. When your well-being is identified with any type of situation, then it's very stressful.
Because you would expect, knowing that I'm illumining this, to crack the progression of the...
Well, in fact, recognizing yourself can help you to bring your mind back. But it just depends on how important that situation is for you. And sometimes when situations are that important, it's a nice thing to sit with it when you're not totally overwhelmed by it, and kind of think it through in light of your knowledge to give yourself some strength in reference to that situation, you know, to help you when the situation raises its head again. If there's a situation that continually overwhelms you, then when you're not overwhelmed, to kind of think back on that and see it for what it is. Well, to kind of help you not get so caught next time.
So see, so if pain is kind of happening, it seems like that's kind of part of the human experience. Now, you can hold that perspective that you're not the pain, and the person who experiences the pain, but there's pain that's happening. So you can kind of, in one way, own your experience without denying the experience.
That's right. But it's one of, I said a little bit differently, because I don't want to set up some kind of a, like a Spensky or something, where you kind of walk around separated from your experience, walking around looking at your mind and looking at your, you know, keeping a split there. You don't have to keep the split. The split is not necessary, because the truth of the self of your mind is Brahman.
Mm-hmm.
It's free. There's no separation.
Mm-hmm.
So what you notice is that, you know, my mind is in pain. That is true, and I'm experiencing that pain. And at the same time, I'm experiencing myself, which is free of pain. Both are happening at exactly the same time. And the one is not removed from the other. It's just that the painful, what belongs to the mind, is changing, like that pain will change and you go through modifications. Maybe it'll get worse, maybe it'll get better, but eventually it will pass. The self that is there with that pain won't pass. It won't change.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get used to recognizing yourself that is the constant and the experiences, good and bad, that are coming and going. But they're coming and going in the constant self, which is Brahman. You know, as we go on, you know, unfolding, you recognize that your being, in fact, is the being that is the light of the world. It's the one that illumines the whole waking state, not just the waker. It's easy for you to see it in terms of the dream, that yourself, Brahman, the conscious being, illumines the whole dream. Not just the dream character in the dream. The whole dream comes from it, is sustained by it, and goes back into it. So the self is the self of the dream, not just one individual in the dream, it's the self of the whole dream. So this conscious being that I am is not just the self of this body, it's the self of the whole. And so that's why myself is yourself. It's not like there's two selves, there's only one self. That's the self of the whole. But then all of the jivas, all of the individuals in this whole creation, your waking state creation versus dream creation, every individual is saying, yes, I am the self, I am the self, I am the self. Right? So myself, the self, belongs to this body. And then you say, yeah, and myself belongs to my body. But actually, there's just one me. You know, that is the self of the whole. Right? And that self is free. If I'm identified with anything within the whole creation, then of course that everything within the creation is subject to change and subject to time and is bound just by its very nature. So I can't expect anything in the creation to give me a constant anything, whether positive or negative, because everything is subject to change on every level. It's not like there's some part of the creation that's not changing. So you put in combination any two things that are changing, both are changing, where you're going to find one little moment of ananda. Two things come together in just the perfect way where the minds are both getting exactly what they want at that moment. So they're both, you know, quiet and blissed out for the moment. But of course, you can't stop time. And so, you know, you're trying to hang on to that moment. Can't. And so it passes. And that's our continual experience. But not for jnani. Because for yourself, that is not the experience of yourself. The experience of your being is constant. It never changes in any way. And so your mind becomes, that is the beloved for the mind. And all of different mystical traditions always talk about that self as the beloved, you know, that which is the most dear. And that which is the most dear is also the most stable, you know, because not bound by time.
Does the actual being, does that have a sense of well-being connected to it?
Yeah.
So, but
not in terms of subject-object, but in terms of its very nature.
I see.
Yeah. It's not that it's thinking, oh, I have this well-being. It is that well-being.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's non-dual in terms of subject-object. But it's very, it's called its very swarup, but its very nature is that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We call it ananda. Sometimes ananda we translate it as wholeness or fullness or well-being. It's the very nature of it, of you. That's why when you're meditating and you're waking up from sleep, there's that sense of wholeness, of just your present, of your being. You know, that your mind, that's right. Swamiji sometimes will talk, you know, when you're waking up from sleep, then you just want to go back just for a few more minutes, just to be with that fullness of your own presence. Meditation is like that too. When you have learned how to meditate in a way that's pleasing and not just a, you know, I guess I should meditate again. How long do I have to do that?
You're using that Japa tonight. I felt that sense of well-being very much so after.
Because those series of things that we went through quietened the mind. Like the repetition of a mantra, it quietens the mind. When the mind is quiet, it's not competing with your nature. Your nature is one of wholeness or of well-being. That's the nature of Brahman.
Carol,
When we say anuvritti, literally all that means is what goes through the experiences, what remains there. So the aham, not the word aham, but the aham, the self, is the anuvritti. That's what remains in all three. What is it that remains there in all three states of experience?
I just wonder why it's referred to as
a... Oh, it doesn't mean vritti. It's anuvritti. But that's a good point. I never thought of it like that. Yeah. Vritti actually means can mean an activity or an action. Is one word for vritti or an occurrence. So anu means that which follows after. It's that which keeps going. That which goes all the way through something while the other things are falling off, like the dream, the waking state falls off, it's replaced by the dream. There's no anuvritti there between the waking state and the dream state. The anuvritti, the thing that stays in both, is only the self. In terms of experience, the one totally negates the other. But then there's the one that illumines both, is the self of both. That's what we mean by anuvritti. That's interesting etymology. I'll have to look into that. I'm just using it as the word.
The idea that which passes through all the
things. Yes. That's what it is. The self of all of them.
Yeah. The follower.
What follows? What follows through?
You know what also is a little overwhelming is when everyone says, I know I am the being. And then you meet somebody else and they say, no, I am the being. I am a conscious being.
Yeah.
Like there's a
not self. You.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's overwhelming because wherever you go, that's the experience. I am not you,
But that's only because of the identification. Because you really yourself can't be you can't objectify consciousness. Your own being, the bottom line of who you are, you can't look at it. It's self-evident. It's consciousness, so it's self-evident, but you can't have consciousness looking at another consciousness. And like in terms of the world, you can look at this body, I can look at this body, and I can look at that body. I can look at this thought, and I can look at that thought, because these are things within duality. But I can't take consciousness out and look at it in a subject-object relationship. It's self-evident because it's consciousness. You know, it doesn't need a subject-object relationship to shine. It's like the sun does. You don't have to bring in another sun to light up the sun. It is the luminosity itself. You know, and so the consciousness that I am can't be objectified, and the consciousness that you are can't be objectified. It doesn't exist as an object in the creation, but the creation isn't away from it. You know, just like that's why I like to use imagination. If I imagine a meadow, there's all kinds of duality within the meadow. Like there can be lots of people and animals in the meadow, lots of trees. There can be stars or the sun or clouds, all kinds of things in my imaginary meadow. Right, and if I go into the meadow, I can have all the characters in the meadow saying, I am a conscious being within this meadow, I am a conscious being. But in truth, there's one conscious being that is the conscious being of the whole meadow, and everything in the meadow is enjoying that conscious existence in one form or another. But I am the self of the whole. And so in the same way, I am the self of the whole. So the self that I am is the self that you are. There's only one me. And that me, we are. don't have the right language for it, but the me, the conscious me, illumines this body and this body and this body and this body and this body, all of these minds,
Mm-hmm.
And then because of ignorance, each mind that's illumined and enjoys me, each mind says, I am me.
Mm-hmm.
And say if my mind that is located in this body says, I am me, I am the self, and your mind located in your body says, yeah, I'm a self too.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two selves because there's two bodies and two minds. But really, there's only one self. Right? And each mind claims me.
Yeah.
Right? But the me experience doesn't belong to the mind or the body or the creation. The me experience that makes me me, that belongs to me. That is consciousness. You know, when you just are aware now just of your own presence, not of the thoughts or the feelings or the physical sensations or the perceptions, just through your own presence. That presence is self-evident. If I get rid of the whole universe, get rid of all duality, like waking up from a dream, that presence of me is still there. That's Brahman. That's the self. And so my I sense belongs to the I. Conscious, not the word I, but consciousness, that is me. And so that's why I know you so intimately, because I am you, not because I'm like you, but I am you. There's only one me here. And then there's tremendous similarities. All of us have the one me, and then each one of us as a human being, we have a body, we have mind, we have sense organs. And so I know how my mind works, so I know how your mind works. You know, there's different situations, but it basically works on the desire template, which is, I need this to be happy. That's agnanam. I want this to be happy, so that I can be happy. And if I don't get it, there's all different types of negative emotions that are generated by that. And if I do get it, there's all kinds of positive emotions that are generated by that. You know, and so I'm familiar myself with all of the negative emotions like, you know, disappointment and hatred, depression, jealousy, envy, all of that. We have a whole slew of negative emotions. I've experienced all of them, you know, and I know what situations evoke those generic situations that evoke the negative emotions. And I've had all the positive ones too, like love and compassion and sympathy and joy and, you know, just all of the just different ones that we love to have, and I know what has generated those too. I see them in myself, I see them in other people, I understand them because we all have them. And there is a common desire template that's at the bottom of it. I need this to be happy. If I, you know, and the ones that help me to realize that desire to be happy are wonderful people.
So
beautiful people. the ones who get in my way are really terrible.
So, so the idea is this sense of me is really generated by awareness.
The sense of me is awareness. It's not even generated by it. It is. It generated requires, implies some doership.
Mm-hmm.
And the desire template comes from avidya.
Avidya, yeah. Ignorance. Self-ignorance.
So it's just pure avidya, basically.
Pure avidya, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't it? The opposite of how things are. Amazing. Yeah. So simple, but so real when you're under its spell.
You said something beautiful. You said, doing everything, you're doing nothing at some point.
Yeah.
That's just so to the point. It's like there's all this doing going on and we're really not doing anything. It's like,
and you can be both aware of both at the same time.
Yeah.
I'm wondering how this witness to the three states of experience is supposed to work to break the dehatma buddhi. Because when you come back to the waking state, the I, for example, says, I didn't do anything.
When you come back from the deep sleep state,
from the deep sleep state to the waking state.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still that associative bond between I, the one who says I, the knower, and the body, and that sense of being the doer, the self. I don't see really how.
If in the waking state you realize that there's a total identification with this body, mind, sense organs that makes you you, and that's the doership, enjoyership, heavy hand, the whole thing, there's a total sense of this is me. Okay, but then this anuvritti idea. When you move from this waking state and the waker in the waking state into the dream state, you remain, your self-experience remains, the me. Okay?
There's no experiencer in that state.
But
there's no cognizance of experience in the deep sleep.
Well, but leave the deep sleep for now. I'm just going from to the dreamer first, okay? Because that contrast really accentuates this idea. In the waking state, that identification is complete, that sense of me as this. But in the dream state, the sense of me is still very much there, but no identification with this. Now it's a different world and a different body. But the me is the same. Okay? So what that means is my self, the conscious being, that experience of me, it's not dependent on the body, mind, sense organs. It's free of it, right? And so I recognize myself through this anuvritti, what remains, right, as being free from what I have taken to be responsible for that experience, that self-experience. So in other words, when the body is, I am. When the body is gone, I'm gone. That when I identify myself as the body, that's the anvaya vyatireka. When the body is, I am. This is why everybody's afraid of death. When the body is, I am. When the body dies, I die. Right? But what I experience, it's just from waking, going from waking to dream, it's when the body is, I am. When this body is gone, I still am. And I have a dream body. Right? This body isn't here anymore. I'm still fine. I'm still me. But now I have this body. Dream body. Now when I go to the deep sleep state, there's no waking body, there's no dream body, there's no subject object either. Because the Atma yourself, there's still me. There's no cognition, there's no activity going on, there's still me. But now I have to recognize that the me actually is not a knower. Consciousness is not a knower. And here in the dream state, consciousness just illumines a jnana, really. But there's no subject-object differentiation. To have subject-object, you need a mind, you need sense organs, you need maya. But the me, your sense of self, is not performing any type of action of knowing or enjoying.
But are you saying there's a me sense in the dream state?
Yeah. I know you don't. It's subtle. You don't grasp it because there's not a mind. The mind is in causal condition, so there's no mind grasping it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The fact is, though, is that the me is its own experience. There's never a wavering in that experience. But you're right that the mind at that time is not performing a function of grasping or thinking or acknowledging. But you know what? Even in the waking state, it's not like you're running around acknowledging yourself all of the time. You just simply are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have the ahankar isn't coming along saying, the I notion isn't saying, yep, there you are, there you are, there you are, there you are. You're not. You just are. And that sense of self, once it's differentiated from all of the objectifiable experiences, is just the constant. But there's another thing to understand too here, is that in the deep sleep state, there's no time. Right? Because there's no marking of time. For there to be time, there's time out here, but in the deep sleep, there's no marking of time. And so there's no space between going into deep sleep and waking up. However, a lot of times in the deep sleep, you're not quite in deep sleep, you're in a liminal state. So you're a little bit partially awake, so there is some sense of time because you're a little bit awake. But when you're really in the deep sleep, there's no marking of time. That might be, I don't know if that's extraneous to you or not, but sometimes there's a sense of time in deep sleep because you're not really in deep sleep, you're in a liminal state. You're not in the dream state, you're not in the waking state, but you're in deep sleep almost. But there's still some presence of recognition of your body or some other type of feeling there that can give a sense of time. But when you're really in deep sleep, there's no sense of time at all.
Just
there's nothing marking it at all.
The one that says I is the knower.
Yes, the ahankara, the thought.
Yeah. So how does that I associate itself with the self when it's always expressing through the mind?
Yeah, but the mind is the self, right?
Right, it's seeing it's the self. But
and so when a thought is a thought is the great labeler, right? It's labeling something. So the thought, the ahankara, is the thought that labels me. But there's ignorance there, so it doesn't just label me. It labels me plus whatever I'm feeling or thinking or seeing. Right? But what makes it the ahankara is that its focus is on me, the conscious being. In fact, the ahankara is labeling Brahman. It is labeling the self. But the ignorance is also there that causes me to take the consciousness to belong to the mind, for instance. Like if I say, you know, I am agitated. Say if I say, talking about my mind, or I'm unhappy, or I'm agitated, or I'm ecstatic about something, whatever I'm labeling. There's the I am part that's being labeled. That's Brahman. The I am that's being labeled, that is Brahman. But you take it to be, you know, you take it to be one with the mind, or one with the emotion, or one with the body.
So, did you say that you have to practice slowing down? I mean, in order for it to become an abiding sense, where there is sort of that pause between the I am and whatever is arising, whatever objectification is sort of arising.
That's why we do Nididhyasana contemplation, is so that you can slow everything down again and again so that you can recognize, differentiate yourself from the changing phenomena.
I'm just wondering specifically how does that work? What is the mind doing? Is the mind creating a sort of pause that almost like japa, where something arises, but there's where you're dissociating the I am from whatever it's...
You're putting the I am where it belongs. You're dissociating it from its false attachment and putting it on to Brahman, or putting it on to Ishwar. You're removing it from the Dehatma Buddhi.
So you're teasing it apart in a way, when you have... Because habitually we say...
You're teasing, you can say it like that. You're teasing it apart, but the self is not apart from the body, right? So it's just taking. You're recognizing it's a satya mitya. You're recognizing the self, and you're recognizing the body. You're recognizing the self. You're recognizing the mind. You're taking the ahankara that has hooked the self to the mind. I am the mind, and instead having that ahankara land onto the self. I am the self that illumines the mind, that is present to the mind. So you see that. And so now the ahankara, that, which is a product of ignorance, of ajnana, is broken. So that now when the I thought comes, it lands on the self instead of on the body. If it lands on the body, it lands on the body as an apparently. But in reality, it's landing on the self. So like right now when you think of yourself as the Atma. Whereas an Ajnani, when they're thinking of their self, it really, they are their body-mind complex. That's who they are. That's where the I lands. And that's for real. It's not pretend. It's really landing there. Once you know yourself, then the I lands on you. You know? And if it doesn't, because of just habitual thinking, then you bring it back because you know yourself.
That's helpful, because I hear the word meditation, but I haven't really heard you talk about what it really involves. And so I have my own way. And
well, maybe since we've done japa, now we'll do nididhyasana, and maybe we can do that next week. Do some where we are, and actually guide you into that. So we'll do some japa and then go to the nididhyasana. That's good. Yeah, we haven't done that for a while. We've kind of done it, but not really labeling it step by step.